You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. Lillian Hellman was once seen as a feminist icon and revered both for her political courage and her artistic output. She advocated economic independence and free love for women, and she practiced both. Her memoirs, published in several volumes in the 1970s, further burnished her image. But since her death in 1984, her reputation has been in a decline. Author Alice Kessler-Harris is a professor of American history at Columbia University, known for her work on labor and gender history. Her latest book, A Difficult Woman, examines the contradictory impulses that made Lillian Hellman famous and then infamous. The book is published by Bloomsbury Press, and I'm happy it brings Alice Kessler-Harris here today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So some reviewers have suggested that your title, A Difficult Woman, is perhaps a kind description of Hellman as one could come up with. Talk about why A Difficult Woman would be considered kind.
Some people have suggested that I should have called the book An Impossible Woman instead of A Difficult Woman. But she was more than difficult. I think that that's fair to say. She was sometimes nasty. She was mean-spirited sometimes. She was often arrogant. She could be rude and dismissive to the people she knew. She was narcissistic, very self-centered. But all that said, though she had qualities of personality that I think none of us would want to emulate, all that said, she was still a very courageous and very talented woman, and she could be warm and generous to her friends, to people she hardly knew. So I think we have to balance the difficult part of her personality with what she accomplished.
It doesn't sound like there's much to... I mean, there's a lot going on there on the negative side there. Was she aware of just how much she antagonized people?
I think she probably wasn't fully aware of it, but she certainly was aware that she had a lot of enemies as well as a lot of friends. But the good side of it, and I think you're right, that the bad needs to be balanced with the good. The good side of her was that she worked very hard and very effectively at the things she committed herself to. She was enormously generous to those people and causes that she cared about. And she was, in some sense, prescient about the future. That is, she imagined herself as a woman in the world, and she wanted to make a mark on it.
Did she feel she made enemies in the path of fighting for right causes?
She made those kinds of enemies in terms of fighting for political causes. And she also made enemies in the theater in terms of her work. So she made enemies wherever she went, in a way. I keep saying that you have to balance that with the friends she made. She also made very good and very long, lifelong-lasting friends who not only cared about her, but who cared about the same causes.
Now, what do your students, of gender studies, know about Lillian Hellman? Why do you think Hellman is still significant?
Yeah, my students don't know very much about Lillian Hellman, or they didn't before they were my students. And I think it's fair to say that the younger generation in general, people under 40, don't know much about Lillian Hellman. Some have never even heard of her. So why is it important to know about her? I think it's important to know about her because everybody over 40 does know about her, and they know about her in a variety of contexts. First, that she was a very effective playwright, the first female playwright to make it on Broadway with really serious plays. And many of those plays have been turned into films and are still broadcast. And if I mention a couple of them, The Children's Hour, The Little Foxes, Watch on the Rhine, we still see those on late-night television all the time. But in addition to her playwriting, she then, in the late 60s and early 70s, began writing that series of memoirs that you spoke about. And those memoirs articulated very clearly the life of a woman who managed to make it despite all odds, to make it as an independent woman, to make her own living, to become self-sustaining, to become an important historical figure. And it's that history that I try to resurrect in the book.
So you assign her memoirs to your classes to read, but isn't there a big controversy about how true these books are?
Yes, there is a big controversy about the books. The first one, An Unfinished Woman, there's much less controversy about. The second one, Pentimento, which is actually a series of essays that Lillian Hellman never wanted advertised as a memoir, has in it one famous essay called Julia, which became the subject of a movie that Jane Fonda and Jason Robards starred in. Mm-hmm. And that story, it turns out, was far from the truth. Lillian had, it was a made-up story, in a sense. And then, in 1976, Hellman published the third volume of her memoirs called Scoundrel Time. And that's a memoir of her appearance before the House Committee on Un-American Activities in 1952. And there is, I would say, an enormous amount of truth in that memoir. It is, after all, her memory of the appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But she was accused, after that memoir was published, of lying about her own past in the Communist Party.
Now, she came after many of her friends in that memoir. What did she accuse them of?
She didn't actually come after many of her friends, but mm-hmm. she did come after people who had taken different political positions than hers. In Scoundrel Time, she came after the people she called liberals, people she thought should have stood up for those who were called before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. She felt that she and others who were asked to tell the truth before the committees, to name names, if you like, should have been defended by people of goodwill everywhere, including the liberals, and angry that they didn't stand up for her and for people like her. She came after those people.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Alice Kessler Harris, professor of American history at Columbia University, about her new book, A Difficult Woman, about Lillian Hellman. So, Professor Harris, Lillian Hellman, as you said at the top of this interview, had a lot of enemies. She was more than a difficult woman. She was an impossible woman. And there was one particular woman who really did not like her, Mary McCarthy. Talk about her.
Mary McCarthy and Lillian Hellman had a very long history dating back to the late 1930s of hostility. It was a kind of parallel hostility. That is, they crossed paths infrequently, and when they did, they didn't like each other. They were on different sides of the political spectrum. In the late 1970s, 1979, then the winter of 1980, Mary McCarthy went on the Dick Cavett show and, in a very famous statement, accused Lillian Hellman of lying. Everything she says is a lie, including and the, she said. Now, Lillian Hellman, by 1980, was old and feeble and blind and ill and confined to her bed. And when she turned on the Dick Cavett show and there was Mary McCarthy seemingly gratuitously attacking her, Hellman lost it, as it were, and called up a lawyer the following day and sued Mary McCarthy for libel.
And how well did that lawsuit go?
Well, the lawsuit lasted for 4 years until Lillian Hellman died, and it was only dropped when she died. But the interesting story is that in the course of fighting the lawsuit, Mary McCarthy then began to uncover material about how Lillian Hellman had lied. That, of course, was her job. And she wrote letters and circulated all her friends and so on and, you know, began to keep track of the lies of Lillian Hellman. So those last 4 years of Hellman's life, in a way, disguised all the good that she had done in her life, the value of the plays, the political actions that she had taken. And Hellman went down as a liar. Whether she would have won the lawsuit or not is beside the point, in a way.
She was advised to drop that lawsuit, wasn't she?
She was advised by many of her friends to drop the lawsuit, and her lawyer, contacted McCarthy's lawyer and said that if McCarthy would simply apologize for the statement, Hellman would drop the lawsuit. But McCarthy refused to apologize, and so Hellman felt it was a matter of face that she couldn't drop the suit.
Wow, I mean, that's the last 4 years of Hellman's life. She spends fine. Do you know how devastating that was to her?
It was completely
What McCarthy said, I mean.
Yeah, it was not so much devastating. That might be the wrong word, but it certainly rankled deeply. That is, she had spent most of her life writing, from her first play, The Children's Hour, writing about the truth and what it meant to be the truth and how one imagined the truth. And then suddenly, on public television, is an individual who has been her enemy, in some ways, all of her life, saying she's nothing but a liar. So it wasn't that it destroyed her, but that it certainly did get her hackles up. Mm-hmm. And
so how did she justify her lapses and her embellishments if she spent her entire life writing about integrity and honesty?
That's one of the interesting problems in the book. She was, of course, a playwright. She was a dramatist, and so she dramatized everything. She dramatized the plays, of course, but she also dramatized her own life. And she had spent much of her life inventing bits and pieces of it. In some ways, that's the way we all act. We all dramatize pieces of our life. But she did it with a flourish, if you like. The story of Julia, for example, which is clearly not something that could have happened to her, nevertheless was a story that she wished might have happened to her. It was a story of a courageous woman who had delivered $50,000 in Nazi Germany to Nazi resistors. She, Lillian, would have imagined that she could have done such a thing. And there's some evidence that she actually convinced herself that she had lived the story. So when she was asked whether that was a lie or not, she, of course, said no, it was the truth.
But was Julia based on a real person. So is it that Lillian Hellman co-opted someone else's life?
No, that's the argument that, of course, McCarthy and McCarthy's friends made. Mm. And it is true that there are resemblances between the story, between the figure that features in the story and the figure that Hellman created. Mm-hmm. But there's no resemblance at all in the story itself. The story is clearly fiction, mm-hmm. even if the protagonist was modeled on somebody who Hellman had heard about.
So let's talk about Lillian Hellman's life. She was born in the South, but she was born in New Orleans.
Yes.
She was also Jewish in the South. In New Orleans. Talk about this.
She was born in 1905 in New Orleans, and so she was born in a period when the Jewish community in New Orleans, and it was a German Jewish community, that is one that had emigrated by and large two generations before, had become largely assimilated into the life of New Orleans. Hellman's own family was not religious at all, and barely understood itself as Jewish, although it did, of course, do that. But Hellman grew up in a rather eclectic and virulently anti-racist climate. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that she learned from being Jewish was what it felt like to be an outsider, an outsider within, we might call it. All her life, she dedicated herself to anti-racist activities. She defended African Americans in the 20s and in the 30s. In the 40s, she went on the stage and raised money and drew attention to Jim Crow laws in the army and so on. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, she covered the early Martin Luther King demonstrations before anybody else was doing that. So I think she thought of Jewishness not as a religion, but as a kind of ethnic place, mm-hmm. which was comparable to the place of African Americans in American culture.
But in terms of anti-Semitism, she didn't think she experienced anti-Semitism in the States, but she does say she only experienced anti-Semitism during a visit to Germany, during Nazi Germany. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. She says in 1929, when she visited Germany for the first time, she saw the brown shirts marching in the streets, and that was her first experience of anti-Semitism. But she was herself accused of being an anti-Semite, which is interesting enough. She was accused of being an anti-Semite by Eastern European Jews who felt that her German Jewishness was a kind of snobbery. And so although she didn't experience it at home, she certainly was the subject of accusations of mm-hmm. anti-Semitism.
And one of the things, she was accused of reducing the impact of Jewishness in the stage version of The Diary of Anne Frank. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. That is right. She was so accused. And I have to say that I searched the record to see whether there was any truth in that and could find none. That is, she knew the producer, she read the play, she was a friend of the playwrights, and so on. But that she deeply influenced, or influenced at all, the direction that the play, the Broadway play, took, I think that's pretty much a myth.
Mm-hmm. We're running out of time, but we can't talk about Lillian Hellman without talking about Dashiell Hammett. He was the love of her life. But wasn't he married at the time?
He was married at the time that they met, but he was already living separately from his wife. I didn't divorce his wife for about 7 years after they met, but he and his wife didn't live together for all that time. And all that time, of course, he was supporting his wife and children. And although he was the love of Hellman's life and she perhaps the love of his, they had a very, you might call it a liberated relationship.
It was an open relationship.
It was a sexually open mm-hmm. relationship, exactly. They sometimes lived with each other and at other times didn't. He had liaisons with all kinds of women of the night, if you like. She had genuine affairs and relationships with several other people while she was living with him. But somehow they managed to maintain, at first, a very strong sexual relationship. And when that ended in the early part of the 1940s, they remained just solidly good friends.
And she took care of him right until the end.
She took care of him until he died. In the last few years of his life, he moved into her house. She not only took care of him, but supported him for all those years.
And real fast, how significant was he in her career and to her politics?
She was quite significant in both. She was significant in her career in that in the early days, he not so much helped her write as read what she'd written and critiqued it and forced her back to the drawing board to rewrite and to rewrite again. And that's a help that she freely acknowledges whenever she talks about her playwriting career. And he was also, this is arguable, but I think led her into the Communist Party and into politics in that she remained loyal in some ways to his positions as long as he was alive.
I've been speaking with historian Alice Kessler Harris about the complex legacy of Lillian Hellman. Her book, A Difficult Woman, The Challenging Life and Times of Lillian Hellman, is published by Bloomsbury Press. Alice, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jonathan.